Today is December 15th, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 108, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com.
So, Brian, it's leading up to Macworld.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite times of the year, not because we will be staying up for like a week straight without sleep and running nonstop from everywhere at the expo, grinding our fingers to the bone, but because we get to give away things like Cirque du Mac tickets.
Yeah, well, actually, it's really the Cirque du Mac party that's the only reason I care about Macworld. Did I say that?
You know, actually, have you ever been to the Cirque du Mac party?
You know, funny enough, I have been. I have been. It's a good time. Good time held by all.
It is, and they have a rockin' band.
They do. They have the Macworld All-Star Band, which I am fortunate to be a part of. This year, unfortunately, Bob Levitis can't join us. He's not coming to Macworld. But it's got Dave Hamilton, that's the president of the Mac Observer and the co-host of the Mac Geek Gab. It's got Paul Kent, the president of IDG. It's got Chris Breen, keyboard extraordinaire and a writer at DoMac. Extraordinaire also. It's got Chuck Laternus on bass. It's got Dwayne Straub on bass. And good Lord, I hope I'm not leaving anyone out.
Well, if you are, we'll be sure and mention them next week.
Fair enough. Yeah. Anyway, the bands, we have a lot of fun. Our audience always has a lot of fun. It's a good time. Oh, and an open bar.
Yeah, an open bar.
I think that really that's why everyone has a good time, but, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, take it as you can get it.
Take it as you can get it. So, we're giving away some tickets.
Which I think is absolutely fantastic and important, because the only way that people can go to Cirque du Mac is by having tickets.
Yes, it is. It's an industry event. It is ticket only. The place is always packed. It's going to be at the Red Devil Lounge. We've had it there for the last two or three years. It's a great venue, and if you want to go, you got to get tickets. And the only way to get tickets is to win them from us.
That's right. So if you go to the Mac Observer website or also check our show notes, we will have instructions on how you can sign up to win tickets to Cirque du Mac.
Mm-hmm. And how many tickets are we giving away?
I have no idea.
Oh, no, that's not what, no, really? No.
Well, actually, my feeling is as many as we can, but I have a feeling that that's not what everyone else wants to do.
Probably not, so you can hear me typing, because I'm on my USB headset again. Rant coming shortly.
Yeah, just you wait.
Well, we're giving away some tickets here. 10 pairs of tickets. 10 pairs 10? Of tickets. 10 pairs. That's right. You and a friend can come to the party. It really is. It's a heck of a good time. It's just a heck of a good time. And we hope that you win tickets.
Yeah, actually. And you know,
do you see how I did that?
Yeah.
It's like I'm talking to the person that's actually listening. Do you like that?
I do. I felt like the podcast was so much more personal as soon as you did that.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. yes, but we do have a rant coming up in the context machine, so we should probably get to it.
I think that sounds like a great idea. Apple fixed a QuickTime security flaw this week, and the security company Heise uncovered a new potential threat to Leopard. Canadians can finally start watching TV, or more specifically, they can start watching TV shows from the iTunes Store. The iPhone was named Time's Gadget of the Year. Apple released Java and GarageBand updates. Opera went all Netscape on Microsoft with an antitrust case in the EU. And Apple's Get a Mac campaign went retro.
Heise Security revealed on Monday that Mac OS 10.5 contains a security flaw that could allow an attacker to crash the system through a denial of service attack. The threat works by taking advantage of an integer overflow when processing certain MacO binaries, which leads to a kernel panic. Macs with only one user account should be immune to potential attacks. For multi-user setups, however, the threat could be exploited even if the user doesn't have administrative-level access because it does not require special privileges. Heist claims the flaw exists in macOS 10.4.11 or macOS 10.5 and macOS 10.5.1, and that Apple has not yet issued a fix. There are no known instances of this threat circulating in the wild, but surely Apple will be renaming the operating system shortly to address the flaw.
And Apple released QuickTime 7.3.1 Thursday afternoon to address several security flaws in the multimedia tool, most notably the update patches and RTSP flaw that could allow an attacker to run unauthorized code on a victim's computer. The update also fixed a QTL flaw that an attacker could use to cause applications to crash or to run arbitrary code, and patched several security holes in the QuickTime Flash media handler by limiting playback to known safe formats. Yeah. QuickTime 7.3.1 updates are available for macOS 10.3.9, 10.4.9 and higher, and 10.5, as well as Windows XP Service Pack 2 and Windows Vista. The updates are free and available through Apple's Software Update application or as standalone installers from the Apple QuickTime website.
Apple's Canadian customers can finally join in a benefit that U.S. and U.K. iTunes Store users have been enjoying for a couple of years now. That's TV shows. Apple began offering TV show downloads in Canada on Wednesday from CTV, CBC, Comedy Central, MTV Networks, and the NHL. iTunes Store customers can download the entire 2007-2008 NHL season, and if they don't, they'll be sorry. The five-game Stanley Cup Classics bundle, Little Mosque on the Prairie, we're not making that up, Corner Gas, South Park, Degrassi, The Next Generation, and more. Individual show episodes are priced at $1.99 Canadian and require the free iTunes application to download.
And Kiplinger's crowned the iPhone the best-designed smartphone, beating out products from Nokia, HTC, and RIM. Where Apple managed to find a good balance for features and design, other companies have fallen prey to what Kiplinger's calls the veg-o-matic syndrome by packing too many features into their products. Nokia filled the N95 with, quote-unquote, every conceivable feature and a screen that's too small. The HTC Tilt and the HTC Touch couldn't match the iPhone's elegance, and while RIM's BlackBerry Curve 8320 offers better email support, it can't match the iPhone's well-thought-out feature set.
Time magazine seems to agree with Kiplinger's as it called the iPhone the 2007 gadget of the year. Considering it was also Time's invention of the year, the iPhone was in a good position to take a spot in the top 10 gadgets of 2007 list as well. Time said, quote, "The iPhone changed the way we think about how mobile media devices should look, feel, and perform. The design is exceptional inside and out. It's got a slick glass and stainless steel case and an elegant touchscreen loaded with eye candy," unquote.
And Apple rolled out a new Java update for macOS 10.4.10 and 10.4.11 on Friday. Java for macOS 10.4 Release 6 improves reliability and compatibility with Java SE 5.0 and Java 1.4 and includes, get out your pencil so you can write this down, J2 SE 5.0 version 1.5.0_13 and Java 1.4.2_16. The update is free and available via software update or as a download from the Apple support website.
There will be a test later.
Yes.
Apple released GarageBand 4.1.1 this week. The update for the music editing application addressed a problem with exporting files for the iPhone and improved overall stability. The update also held a special surprise for iPhone owners. Now they can create their own custom ringtones and export them directly to iTunes. The new feature supports user-created songs and recordings, Apple Loops, and iLife jingles. No copy-protected content allowed. It requires iTunes 7.5 and higher and iPhone software version 1.1.2.
Opera, the company that makes the cross-platform web browser with the same name, filed an antitrust complaint against Microsoft with the European Union on Wednesday. The complaint alleged that Microsoft is engaging in anti-competitive behavior and is abusing its monopoly powers by tying its Internet Explorer web browser to the Windows operating system. The company also claimed that Microsoft is intentionally refusing to follow industry standards, which hampers the ability of web developers to create browser-compliant sites.
Opera is asking the EU Commission to force Microsoft to unbundle Internet Explorer from Windows or include alternative web browsers as part of the Windows installation. Folks, you have no idea how many takes that took to get it even that bad. The company is also asking the Commission to require Microsoft to follow open and accepted web standards so that site developers can code for all browsers instead of having to choose between coding for Internet Explorers or most other browsers. The complaint contends that Microsoft's unilateral controls over some standards has hampered innovation and creates artificial standards that cost more to support, are more difficult to maintain, and can expose users to unnecessary security risks. There is no word yet on when to expect a ruling from the EU Commission.
And finally, Apple is getting in the holiday spirit with its latest Get a Mac ad. Like the other commercials in the successful series, this one features John Hodgman as PC and Justin Long as Mac, well, at least in voice. The Santa Claus Get a Mac ad takes on a more retro look thanks to its late 1960s Rankin and Bass animated holiday special style. The only thing missing from this commercial are the misfit toys singing backup for Santa, Mac, and PC. Santa Claus can be viewed in QuickTime format at the Apple website.
And remember, kids, nobody likes a Charlie in the Box. It's time for the Context Machine, where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on. You know, this is not really part of our Context Machine, but it occurs to me how many commercials I've seen that have licensed the Rankin and Bass look for this year. I mean, clearly something has opened up.
I think so. I think people are kind of getting in this whole retro thing, and we grew up with those animated holiday specials. And So I think there's a lot of people that are our general age that are suddenly having this wave of nostalgia and probably feeling a little guilty about not having a Charlie in the Box.
Nobody likes a Charlie in the Box, but or a train with square wheels or a doll that won't cry. It's a doll that won't cry or a train with square wheels to get it in the proper order. But my actual point was that I think that there's been a real push to license this stuff. I don't think it's just choice. And, you know, for Apple to be among the companies that did license that look and feel, it's just kind of interesting to me. And I like seeing the company take that sort of different approach to pushing an already very successful.
I thought it was just a wonderfully fresh take on the whole Get a Mac thing. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful. Oh, and by the way, I told you so. Nanny, nanny, poo-poo.
You did?
Yes. Last week, I said that Apple was going to release more holiday commercials before...
You did! Yeah. You're totally right, and I was totally wrong.
So, there you go. I was right, you
Everybody,
were wrong.
Everybody, please mark this date on your calendar, because it just doesn't happen very often. Brian was wrong.
There you go. And you know what? I have the video proof and the audio proof to show.
And not only that, but I will happily admit it. I was completely wrong. Jeff is right. And we got these great new commercials, and they're definitely fun.
Yeah. Now we'll see if we get another one next week.
Yeah. Speaking of fun. Oh, wait a minute. Not fun. Adobe and M-Audio are just driving me bananas. You know what? I opened Go Live today, and I go to edit a little bit of HTML in there, and I'm in the code view where you actually see the HTML code, and I double-click on my tab. This is from a Go Live CS2. And I just marvel at the way Adobe has taken out the feature that when you double-click on an HTML tag in the code mode, that it highlights the whole tag. They took that. They went to the effort. They had this. Here's this great feature. So what we're going to do with this great feature is we're going to just take it right out.
Well, it's not like anyone ever uses that feature, right?
No, of course not. So another thing that happened is I go to open up this project, and then I go to close it, and it asks me if I really want to close the project. I just tried to close. What am I using Windows? What is up with those guys? I mean, it's the original Go Live Cyber Studio did not have nearly as many features, but it was a better application than what Adobe has done with Go Live.
You know, Go Life Cyber Studio, I totally loved that program. It was so solid, and it was, I felt, revolutionary, because it actually made coding for mere mortals to be totally possible, and you could do so much with it. Now, of course, compared to what you can do today with other applications, it seems very limited. But keep in mind, at the time that we had Go Life Cyber Studio, you didn't have a lot of the web standards that we have today.
No, and you know, the competitors at the time were Microsoft's Front Page and Adobe PageMill, and a few, there were a few in the mom and pop apps too out there. But
oh my God, I forgot about Adobe PageMill. So thanks for opening that wound.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's funny. I've been watching this product. I use Go Live instead of Dreamweaver because of the project feature, where it keeps track of all my files and where they are, and actually is tied to the Finder, so that when I move a file in the project, it actually moves it in the Finder. And for me, that's a big deal, because I keep all of the files and documents that I use for editing and writing at the Mac Observer in this project file. Even though they get added to, we have a publishing system on the server, but when it comes to me being able to edit the originals and you know, do things like that, the project file, the project feature in Go Live is just terrific. But like one by one, they've just been taking out all these other fantastic features, and they go to the effort, they pay somebody to take them out. Why? It's like their developers all have the short-sighted perspective of Windows users.
You know, I have a theory on why a lot of those features disappear.
Do tell.
And okay, here's my theory, which you're not going to like, but here we go. All right, so Adobe has a really good product, a product that was able to compete really, really well with Dreamweaver. And of course, yes, there's people that on either side of the camp will say, not so, Go Live's better, Dreamweaver's better, whatever. Okay, so you have this application that's part of your whole product ensemble, and it now competes directly with the product you want to promote, which is Dreamweaver. So what you have to do over time is marginalize the product that you want people to stop using. So how do you make people that are devout, hardcore Go Live users switch to Dreamweaver? You start taking away the features that they rely on, and then move those features over into Dreamweaver.
I'd buy that, Jeff. I would buy that as the reason, if it hadn't been happening from long before they bought Macromedia.
Okay, well, there are definitely things that happen where I sit back and go, what were they thinking?
What were they thinking? What, and with Go Live in particular, you know, there's always been little things with Photoshop. Adobe has always liked to move features around inexplicably, from, you know, like from menu to menu. I mean, those have
musical
been,
features, yeah.
Yeah, musical features. They're not really changing, they're just moved. And that's a weird thing. But when it comes to Go Live in particular, it has just become a less and less well-made app. It certainly has added more features. It's supported more web standards. It's supported more technologies, and it's done things like that. But all along, it has become an application that is less good to use. And it just drives me. It just drives me bananas out of principle. And it could be because I was already way mad at M-Audio.
Yeah. Speaking of M-Audio, how do you feel about those guys right now, Brian?
Oh man, their lack of records. You know. Okay. So I've got a FireWire 410. I used a FireWire 410 to plug in my nice microphone for recording, so that I don't sound like I'm in the wind tunnel, like I probably sound like I am right now. FireWire 410 takes that signal, sends it through the FireWire cable to the Mac. The Mac knows what to do with it. Everything's good to go. All right? The only problem is that they don't support Leopard yet, because, you know, they haven't had a year and, what, like 10 months since it was announced to get this crap right?
Well, this
right?
Totally snuck up on them. I mean, how can you blame these guys for not having new drivers out?
Yeah, good point. It totally snuck up on them. You know, they're not even supporting 10.4.11. The latest set of drivers that are out there are for 10.4.10.
Wait, are you saying that there's a 10.4.11 update out? When did this happen?
Knowledge base, and they said, well, we just don't know when we're going to support Leopard. It's like, I mean, so in the meanwhile, let's compare that to Etterol. folks at Adderall, which Adderall is owned by Roland, you look at a product like the equivalent, I'm scrolling, you can probably hear me scrolling because I'm having to use my crappy mic. Look at the FireWire FA-101, which is basically a very similar box to the FireWire 410 from M-Audio. And, oh, it supports macOS 10.3.4 natively. And
how
higher.
About that?
Or and natively, it supports it higher because Adderall works with the tools that are built into Mac OS X. They're not rewriting or reinventing the wheel. They use what Apple gives them, and they make their stuff work with that, which is give or take a bit the way it should be in my never humble opinion.
You know, never humble opinion. I love that. Okay. So one of the things that I've always loved about a wide range of the FireWire devices out on the market is that you don't necessarily need to have drivers to use them. You plug in the device and everything that whatever this component needs to be able to talk to your computer is built in. And it tends to just work. You know, like you plug in a FireWire hard drive. It just shows up in your desktop. And yeah, and so Adderall, their breakout box just plugs in and works.
It just plugs in and works. And most of Adderall stuff does that. I've talked to engineers who have long said that Adderall makes a better product because they do tap into Mac OS X stuff. And that's something that I'm definitely seeing here. And it just has me hot because I'm sure there's a point. I'm sure there's a point, or it wouldn't exist as it is. But it's ridiculous.
You know, I've had to do some setup work on the M-Audio 410 before. And what I found was that it was kind of creepy. Not like bugs crawling up your back or, you know, sinking in quicksand while someone attacks you with a hatchet creepy. But, like, you didn't know if the settings that you were putting in to the software interface were actually going to be working. And once you had that done, you had to back up that configuration file because you never knew when it was going to just stop working again and you'd have to restore that from your backup.
Yep, fair enough. And another complaint I've got about this thing is they want me to turn my Mac on and off every time I plug in the FireWire 410. What is this, 1998?
Yeah, and just so you get a good connection, be sure to lick the FireWire plug before you stick it in your computer.
Yeah, good advice.
Not.
But all right, be that as it may, this kind of reminds me of another really good feature that was inexplicably taken out, and that's FireWire out of the iPod line.
You know, that has always bothered me, and the reasoning behind it, the reasoning I was told, which is if you go with just USB, it reduces the cost to produce a product, and it's available to a wider audience because many Windows users don't understand that FireWire is actually better than USB. Okay, fine. But that doesn't mean that you should be penalizing the people that can actually take advantage of FireWire and get why you would want to use it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, this just drives me nuts. And there was another reason, too, as I understood it, when the last generation of iPods came out, when they first went USB only, another issue was simply the size or availability. Of a chip to actually be able to push FireWire in USB, but be that as it may, fix it now, folks. I mean, you know, just USB is a piece of crap.
You know, okay. So for the people that don't get why Brian would want to rant about USB versus FireWire, so here's how it works. If you look on paper, the specs for USB 2.0 appear to be better than FireWire. The problem is USB 2.0 tends to be it tends to fluctuate a lot, the transmission rate. So what you have is this low data transmission rate that bursts up to the spec speed.
480.
Right.
Yeah, 480, 40 megabits per second versus 400 megabits per second for.
Right. So what you're actually getting for your bandwidth is not nearly what it looks like on paper. Now, when you're using FireWire, it may not be hitting that top speed all the time, but it's very consistent. FireWire is designed to do data throughput, and it's designed to do it effectively. USB is designed to take small bits of data and just move them over quickly, but it has to be small bits of data. So if you use USB 2.0 as opposed to FireWire to transfer music or movies, whatever, to your iPhone, it's going to take a lot longer. That's just the nature of how USB works.
Right. You know, and part of the reason that, Apple moved away from FireWire was because the let me explain, folks. We actually lost part of our recording.
Yeah, I guess we kind of have to fess up to that.
Yeah, let's fess up for it. The part of Jeff's recording on his end just went completely away. So we're actually redoing the rest of the show. So bear with us. Hopefully the segue actually makes sense. And I know that right about here I was talking about the fact that part of the difference between FireWire and USB is that the chipsets for FireWire are further along, so they're a lot more efficient, just a lot more efficient.
Right.
And that's part of why USB's performance can't touch FireWire's performance.
Right. And yeah, it's just, you know, if you look at it, USB is designed to move small packets of data. FireWire is designed to move large amounts of data.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just the nature of the beast. And I think, to kind of sort of close this thing up here, I think that taking the iPhone and iPod away from FireWire, or in the iPhone's case, never introducing it with FireWire, is akin to removing the ability to select an entire tag and go live by double-clicking on the code.
Yeah.
It's a backward step. It's a backward step, and I know that it's not news, folks. You know, it definitely fits within this rant of companies doing things that they shouldn't do. But you know, on the other hand, Jeff, let's actually look at where Apple's kicking some butt and talk about the iPhone being a top gadget.
You know, yeah, that's actually a really cool thing. Not just because I own an iPhone, but because it signals a new era for the cell phone market, I think. Apple came in to the market with this product that appears to be so much better than anything else that's available, and now it's setting a new standard for all of these companies. Hopefully, this means we're going to start seeing a lot new, brand new products that are really cool coming out from the other cell phone manufacturers.
Yeah, we can hope at least. And you know, this is the case where Apple's on top and is doing well. Unlike, for instance,
Palm.
Palm, sure. Or, you know, we talked about in our first take, as my iPhone is making my speakers go bananas, despite the fact that my speakers are turned down.
Yeah. Okay, here's a quick tip.
Boy, this has just been a technical issue ridden episode.
It has, but you know, what a trooper, Brian. You haven't thrown your computer through the window yet. And I haven't thrown
not yet.
I haven't thrown mine through the window either. Although that would be really bad because my computer is actually from Tech Restore, and at some point they're going to want it back, probably in one piece.
Yeah, they probably will want that back in one piece. Let's take a moment out for some positive stuff and thank Tech Restore for that computer.
I think that's a great idea. You know, it's absolutely wonderful that they sent this computer out to me because. Well, their intention was to give me a computer that I could use to test products for all of our readers and listeners, and this machine has been absolutely invaluable. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, everyone at Tech Restore.
Yeah, absolutely. And so back to the iPhone. So far, Apple can, you know, was pretty much firing on all syllables. Like, you know, there's the A, the B, the D, the T, and to the C. Apple is firing on all cylinders with the iPhone, and you know, this year has been just a banner year for the company.
You know, I've got a quick tip for you on that. The buzzing.
Please
okay,
do.
Okay, no extra cost or obligation to you. Turning down the speakers, your external speakers, will not fix the problem. You actually have to cut the power supply to them, so unplug them from the wall, and that will make the buzzing stop.
Huh, good to know. Thanks,
buddy.
There
you go.
You're the best.
Hey, I've got your back.
You always have my back. And apparently Time has got Apple's back. And this is, what, the second award for them, right?
Yes. Time gave them an award, a week or two ago for the invention of the year. And now they're following that up with gadget of the year. How about that? Now, I suppose if you're the invention of the year and you're a gadget, you probably have a pretty high likelihood of winning both awards.
In the first version, we sort of went off on a couple of tangents about Microsoft and previous antitrust suits, but I think the short version that, and the more succinct version, so we'll try to be our most Steve-esque, is that Microsoft really doesn't have the power today that they used to have, and I think that Opera is probably barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah, you know, I'm agreeing with you on this one. I think that at least in the web browser space, Microsoft doesn't have the strong arm that they used to. They still are the big guy on the block, but they're on a downward slide with the popularity of Internet Explorer, and I really don't see how they're going to be able to change that.
Yeah, and I don't like the notion of two things. First of all, I think that it can safely be said that Microsoft has lost some of that power due far more to its own incompetence than, at least on the Windows side, because, as I will always say, I love the Mac business unit. But on the Windows side, they've lost a lot of that monopoly power due to their own incompetence rather than any of the, you know, half-ass efforts by various governments and lawsuits to try to take that monopoly power away from them.
Yeah, you know, in that respect, Microsoft is actually their own worst enemy.
Yeah, absolutely. IE7 has and the later versions of IE6 were just not popular.
No, not at all. And I'm not expecting that to change. You know,
I'm not expecting that to change either. I don't think that Microsoft is ever going to be able to make Windows a great operating system. I really don't. It would take a company that is utterly different than the Microsoft we know of today to ever make that happen.
You know, you're probably right. And if you look at a lot of the coders that Microsoft has working for them, they do have some really smart and really bright and brilliant people on their payroll. And I think that these people, if you went to them as Microsoft and said, you know, this Windows thing, just forget it. Why don't you start over and why don't you make us an operating system that will totally kick ass? And they probably could do it. You know,
why don't make an operating system that you'd want to use?
Right. And I think they could do it, but they can't. And that's because they have the legacy of Windows, of all of the hardware that they have to make sure that their systems work with. And
yeah, that whole open hardware thing that Windows lovers just, you know, love to tout over the fact that, you know, they're not locked into one hardware provider. Well, you know, the payoff on that, you bozos, is that you have a piece of shit operating system.
Well, there you go.
Did I use the S word there? I might have to bleep that out.
yeah, you did.
I did say that. I'm sorry. I've been a little emotional today, guys. It's been
a stress day for Brian.
Yeah, in large part, at least in no thanks to M-Audio and this Go Live thing too. But we won't get back into that. The bottom line is that I don't think Opera is going to go anywhere with this,
I think that Opera's best bet would be, instead of investing their money in legal action against Microsoft, invest their money in product development and make a kick-ass product that people want to use, and people will use it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Of course, you know, they're hampered by the fact that they're, at this point, the only company charging for their browser.
That's not true. Omni Group charges for OmniWeb still.
Oh, of course, the Omni Group, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's true. And you know, OmniWeb both Opera and OmniWeb are examples of very interesting web browsers.
They are. And actually, you didn't unplug your speakers.
I know.
Yeah. And yeah, Safari I think is a great browser, but honestly, even with Leopard, I still haven't switched back to Safari from OmniWeb. How interesting is that? Well, for some people, very.
It's actually very interesting. And the only reason I didn't immediately say that was interesting is because I had my microphone muted because my phone was still making my speakers go bananas.
You're still having a bad tech day.
It's a bad tech day, man. A bad tech day. That's funny. I like that notion. a bad, I mean, in relationship to, of course, a bad hair day.
Right.
I'm having a bad tech day.
You are. And
I like that.
I'm not helping
much. I like that. You know, I like that a lot. All right. Well, let's get out of here. And folks, thanks for sticking with us through, I feel like right about now, I feel like, David St. Hubbins, I'm sorry, Nigel Tufnel. when he finally just grins and accepts the fact that he's going to have the interference on his wireless guitar cord.
But it goes to 11. All right. You know, okay. So if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to Steveliness. And believe it or not, that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback.
Absolutely, and thanks everybody for your continued support. The show has never been bigger than it is right now, and we really appreciate that. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.